Wednesday, I watched the riot. I seen the cops out on the street, watch them throwing rocks and stuff and choking in the heat. Listened to reports about the whiskey passing round. Seen the freaks and fire and the market burning down. Watch while everybody in their street would take a turn to stomp and smash and crash and bash and smash and bust and burn. So I thought I'd get your attention. That's a poem from Frank Zappa in 1966. Okay. Totally new topic. Totally new topic. And that is about Christianity and the academia today. Many of you have kids in college and are concerned about what is happening with kids in college, and you should be concerned. Now, I teach at Baylor. Baylor is a Baptist university. Purportedly, every faculty member that comes to Baylor must do an interview with the provost or an assignee of the provost in order to determine whether they are Christian. Now, we cast a wide berth, or Baylor does. You can be Catholic, you can be Presbyterian, Baptist, Methodist, etc. But are you ones that, are you a follower of Christ? And unfortunately, there's some that slip through, and if Baylor loses it, it's going to go the way of SMU. You know what the M stands for in SMU? Methodist. Yeah, they never talk about that anymore. Or Texas Christian University, TCU. I gave out. The C is, they don't talk about the C anymore. So there's lots of institutions which have gone away from the Christians. And you're going to have professors like this. And this is what I want to address here. And I want to address something called the New Atheists. These are professors that are outspoken atheists. They will make fun of your kids and their beliefs. And one of the organizations I'm associated with is Ratio Christi, recognizes that 80-90% of the kids that go to church when they're in high school, when they go to college, quit going to church. The statistics are astonishing and frightening. And a lot of it is because the kids don't know the arguments to push back. So Ratio Christi attempts to arm these young people with apologetics, with alternate reasons that their professors would profess. So these are the new atheists. Dawkins is a professor in England, Myers in Minnesota. Hitchens has recently passed away, and Provine is also a professor. And here's a typical quote. It says, "Christian theism must be rejected by any person with even a shred of respect for reason." George H. Smith, atheist philosopher. So here we have, I'm going to play you a video. This is Peter Atkins. Atkins is a professor of chemistry at Oxford. And let's see what he has to say about Christianity. Again, I think I have to go back and start it here. Where'd you go? There you are.
Religion, I mean, it's just fantasy, basically. It's completely empty of any explanatory content. And it's evil as well.
Okay, so that's one of the professors. You notice something he said, and it's evil as well. He doesn't realize the contradictory statement there. If there's evil, what must there be? Good. And where does that good come from? So he's, you know, it's a self-contradictory thing to say that. There's also maybe one of the most outspoken. I'm getting a little, can you hear me okay? Okay, it's good, okay. One of the most outspoken people is Richard Dawkins. He wrote a book called The God Delusion, which just talked about his I heard a little feedback there. It talked about his atheism. Now, Dawkins is also from Oxford, so this is a pretty prestigious university. And he goes on there and talks about his atheism. In fact, he put together a tour, there's probably no God, now stop worrying and enjoy your life. This was on a bus that he took a tour of, preaching his atheist doctrine. John Lennox summarized Richard Dawkins' philosophy very succinctly. He said, Richard Dawkins, he has 2 points. Number one, there is no God. Number two, I hate him. So I want you to listen to Richard Dawkins and see how chilling this is, if it's as chilling for you as it is for me. Where'd you go? There you are. Okay.
And it was then when I discovered evolution, when I discovered Darwinism, that I realized there's this magnificently elegant, stunningly elegant explanation, which I didn't quite understand to begin with. When I did understand it, then that finally killed off my remaining religious faith. I think that God is about as unlikely as fairies, angels, hobgoblins, etc. The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Jealous and proud of it, a petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully.
Whew! That kind of leaves you breathless, doesn't it? So, what is the pushback from this? By the way, the pastor who began the prayer to start this quoted Romans 1:20. And Romans 1:20 goes on, and you saw that Dawkins had a list about God, all the terrible things he did. Well, you know, God has a list about Dawkins. And it's in Romans, this is the first chapter of Romans. Atheists have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. So that's the pushback on Dawkins from the Apostle Paul. I thought that was a very interesting contrast between the two. Here's another guy, University of Minnesota, P.Z. Myers. He runs a blog, an atheist blog, where he hates Christians also. Let's see what he says.
I never hated religion. I found religion quite comfortable, and I liked the people in it. What led to the atheism was learning more about science, learning more about the natural world, and seeing these horrible conflicts with religion. And if you separate out the ethical message from religion, what have you got left? You got a bunch of fairy tales, right? Greater science literacy, which is going to lead to the erosion of religion, and then we'll get this nice positive feedback mechanism going, whereas religion slowly fades away, we get more and more science to replace it, and that will displace more and more religion, which will allow more and more science in, and we'll eventually get to that point where religion has taken that appropriate place as side dish rather than the main course.
So P.C. Myers is a biology professor at the University of Minnesota. And if you take his course, you will hear more stuff like this. Now, I'm going to be talking tomorrow about Walter Bradley. Walter Bradley expressed his faith at Texas A&M and was called into the dean's office. The dean said, Walter, you got to quit talking about Jesus Christ in your class. Well, Walter didn't, as we'll talk about tomorrow. The only thing he did is he told his class he was a Christian. He was just talking about himself. He wasn't thumping a Bible or, you know, trying to proselytize, just telling him about the self. So Walter sat down and said, okay, no, I can't talk about Jesus in my class. And the dean said, no. And he says, well, okay, I'll stop doing it, but how are we going to stop all the people like P.Z. Myers and those of talking against Christ? If there's no talk about religion in the classroom, then they should be silenced also. Great counterargument, right? The dean, as we'll find out tomorrow from a remarkable man, Walter Bradley, sat back, rubbed his chin, and said, wow, never mind. Go ahead and talk to your class about that. So, I think that these are very important. What I want to do is I want to push back on this. I want to convince you that modern science was founded in Western Europe and was founded because of Christianity. And it goes back to Romans 1:20, which says that the evidence of God is so incredible that you have no excuse not to believe in God. Do you believe there was an architect that built this building? Yeah. Have you ever met him? No. You don't need to know that there was an architect that built the building, right? Just the evidence of the creation is enough. And you and I are so fearfully and wonderfully made that we look at the creation of this building as just, it's nothing compared to the miracle that you are. So therefore, if you're more of a miracle than the creation of this building, you had to have a creator, even though you've never met him one-on-one. And we see this in science too, because Romans 1:20 says that everything is evident. We see science in Western Europe talking about this and looking more at science with the idea that looking closer in science would reveal God more. Let's take, for example, Pasteur. Some of these people you might not have heard of. If you're a student in college and you're a STEM student, you've heard of a lot of them, though. You've all heard of Pasteur, pasteurization, right? It says, the more I study nature, the more I stand amazed at the work of the Creator. In other words, he was celebrating Romans 1:20. Into his tiniest creatures, God has placed extraordinary properties. Isaac Newton was one of the greatest names in the history of human thought. And if you take a course in calculus, your first year, or first two courses in calculus, basically study what Isaac Newton created. Also, if you take a course in physics, the first semester or two semesters is going to be a study of the physics that was invented by Isaac Newton. He was an extraordinary man. Now, his work stood strong, and at the beginning of the 20th century, quantum mechanics was added as a wing, relativity was added as a wing, but nevertheless, the foundation of modern physics rises and falls with Newton. Now, here's a bunch of stamps with Newton on them. You know you've really made it if you picture on a stamp, right? So they're people from the Congo, Poland, France. Gosh, I don't know what that is. I think it's Russia. He's pretty famous. He made a bunch of contributions, too. And you know you really have made it when people start naming things after you. If you're familiar with the metric unit for force, that's called a newton. And here's just a bunch of other stuff. You'll also know you've made it if your name becomes an adjective. If your name becomes an adjective, you've really made it. Okay, so we have Newtonian telescope, the Newtonian dynamics. So he has really made it. Newton said the beautiful system of the sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent and powerful being. From his book, Optics, this is really interesting. God in the beginning formed matter in solid, massy, hard, impenetrable, movable particles of such sizes and figures, and with other such properties in such proportion to space as most conduce for the end which he formed them. I don't know if you know this, but he was paraphrasing a verse in Revelation, which says, God in the beginning formed solid, let's see, I don't have it. Yeah, here it is. Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they were created. And Newton was basically paraphrasing that phrase from Revelation 4:11. He was not a big fan of atheism. He said, atheism is so senseless and odious to mankind that it never had many professors. Don't you think it's curious he used the word professors? Yeah, that is interesting. Not only that, but Lord Kelvin. You in Montana should know about Kelvin, right? Who was Kelvin? Degrees Kelvin, right? I think last week in Montana you reached like 230 degrees Kelvin above absolute zero. But he said the atheistic idea is so nonsensical that I cannot put it into words. A lot of these people, again, were Eastern Europe, and we're going to touch on a number of them. Kepler, if you've ever heard of Kepler, this guy was incredible. He got all of this data from a guy named Tycho Brahe. Now, Tycho Brahe was an interesting guy. He was royal. He liked to do nerdy stuff, so he used a lot of his royal money to get instruments and took all these accurate measurements that Kepler looked at. And when he was 20... Tycho Brahe got into a duel with his third cousin, and his third cousin cut off his nose. And for the rest of his life, Tycho Brahe had a brass nose that he had to glue on every morning. So he was an interesting guy. But Kepler took the work of Tycho Brahe, and he came up with Kepler's laws, which were astonishing. I mean, think of this guy. This was before telescopes and before anything. He was just looking at the movement of the planets and plotting them out. So just an extraordinary guy. And then when he was asked, why do you do science? Kepler answered that his desire in the scientific research to obtain a sample test of the delight of the divine creator in his work. Again, a Romans 1:20 sort of reference, that because God had created all of this, it was really, really incredible. And I think you've all heard of Marconi. He invented the radio, won a Nobel Prize for that. He said, the more I work with the powers of nature, the more I feel God's benevolence to man. The closer I am to the great truth that everything is dependent on the eternal creator and sustainer. Again, looking into the creation of God and looking deep into the creation of God and finding God there. Here's another guy, Michael Faraday. You might not have heard of him, but he's the father of my field, electrical engineering. He was probably the greatest experimentalist of the 19th century. He would have won four or five Nobel Prizes. And he has a bunch of stuff named after him, including Faraday's law, the Faraday effect. He is the inventor of the brushless motor that we use. That's somebody else. But he came up with the laws that describe electromagnetics through experimentation. Faraday said, enabling the mind to apply the natural power through law conveys the gifts of God to man. I'll tell you more about Faraday in a little bit. George Washington Carver, the great experimentalist from the United States, who was an outspoken Christian, he said, God is going to reveal to us things he never revealed before we put our hands in his. He was so much a believer in God that he named his lab, where he did all of his work, he named his lab God's Little Workshop. And I have a list of things that Carver did by applying soybeans, pecans, and sweet potatoes. He made adhesives, axle grease, bleach, buttermilk, chili sauce, fuel briquettes, ink, instant coffee, linoleum, mayonnaise, meat tenderizer, metal polish, paper, plastic, pavement, shaving cream, shoe polish, synthetic rubber, talcum powder, and wood stain. So he was a pretty prolific guy, and he did a lot of really interesting stuff. I don't know if anybody of you have heard of Bayes, but if you take a class in probability, you know this is one of the first things you're taught, is Bayes' theorem. Bayes' theorem was so profound that you use it today. You know, the instrument that takes all of your spam and puts it in one folder and keeps all your important messages in another, that uses something called Bayesian inference, and this is all due to Bayes. People are taught who these people are, but they're taught what they've done, but not who they are. Bayes, everybody knows Bayes is what Bayes has done. Nobody knows, or very few people know, who he was. He was actually a Presbyterian minister outside of London, and his day job, he did mathematics as a hobby. His day job was mentoring his church. James Clerk Maxwell. Was just an extraordinary guy. He did these equations. I don't expect you, I said there would be no equations, I lied. There's some equations here. But those four equations describe the propagation of all electromagnetic energy. Gamma rays, X-rays, light rays, any sort of, the wireless waves that are received by your cell phone. They're all incorporated into this. In fact, my engineering society used to have a shirt and it says, and God said, they put Maxwell's equations, these four equations, and there was light. Okay. So he was just an astonishing fellow. He said, I believe that man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And then the only desire which I can have is, like David, to serve my own generation by the will of God and then fall asleep. Blaise Maxwell. We're going to talk more about Blaise Maxwell. Blaise Maxwell and I are good friends. I have read his works. I have read his biographies, and it just is incredible. Some of you might remember in high school something called Pascal's Triangle. He was the one that did that. He was also the one that started the modern theory of probability. It used to be in Pascal's time that what's going to happen in the future? We don't know what's going to happen in the future. There's no way to talk about it. But he was able to define the future in terms of probability. And he founded this with a sequence of letters that went back and forth between him and another great French mathematician, Fermat. And after a number of things, they developed the theory of probability. And after that, they had all of a sudden they had began to do actuarial tables. People began to sell insurance because you could talk probabilistically about what would happen to people in the future. Before that, they had no idea. Pascal also, as a kid, invented the first computer. It was called the Pascaline. He invented it for his daddy, who I believe, if I remember right, was a tax collector. And then there was Leonard Euler. Leonard Euler, if you haven't heard of him, he was, in my opinion, the greatest mathematician of all time. He was just an astonishing guy. He has an interesting story. He went blind in one eye when he was in St. Petersburg under the support of Frederick the Great. And he went blind in one eye, and he said, I don't worry about it. There'll be less for me to be distracted from my mathematics. Well, that was cool. That was a good positive statement to make. But then he went blind in the other eye. But that didn't stop Euler. He had like two, let's see, what's the number I have? I got a number of different numbers, but the one I've settled on is he had 229 publications of his mathematical results that were published after his death. The reason is Euler would sit down with his students and he would explain to him the mathematics that he had going into his mind while he was blind, and they wrote it down and they wrote the articles, 229 of them. And you talk about having things named after you. If you haven't heard of Euler, he is worth looking at. All of these things are named after Euler. Euler angles, defining a rotation in space, Euler's matroid, the Euler Mascheroni constant, etc. And that's a lot, right? But guess what? There's more. Euler's criteria, Euler's constant, the Euler cycle. Isn't that impressive? Well, there's even more. Euler's product formula, Euler-Maclaurin formula, Euler's homogeneous function, etc. And that's pretty impressive, but guess what? There are even more. And so this guy was just astonishing in his mathematical capability, and again, in my mind, was the greatest mathematician of all times. Euler said, "The fabric of the universe is most perfect in the work of a most wise creator." So in his mathematics, Euler saw God. Now, we've saw in the beginning, we have some atheists, and these atheists are outspoken. There's nothing new under the sun, as it says in Ecclesiastes. Were all motivated by belief of God? No, they weren't. There was a guy named Pierre-Simon Laplace. If you're a STEM student, you know of things like Laplace transforms, Laplacians, all sorts of different things. He was instrumental in establishing the metric unit, or metric system back then. And he was under the... He was with Napoleon, and Napoleon asked him to write a treatise on the... on the cosmos. And Napoleon got his work and he leaped through it and he said, I don't see you mention God in here anywhere. And Napoleon said, "Sire, I have no need of that hypothesis." So Laplace, even back then, didn't believe in God. So in some sense, nothing really has changed. There's been the Christians, there's been the people that believe in God, and then there have been the atheists. Now, we've only talked about God. And I think up to now, you could probably support what I did here, if you were a Muslim or another religion, and you know, one of the questions is, why didn't the Muslims develop science? Do you know why the Muslims didn't declare science? They have something called, I believe it's called shirk, and this was the idea that they could not create anything. They could not create anything which Allah could not overdo. Now, they did a lot of work in astronomy. They did a lot of interesting work in mathematics, but they never ventured into looking at creation because they were afraid that they would violate shirk. So now I want to talk not only about the belief in God, but the belief in Christianity. Now, today, you know, if you talk about Christianity, you have to define what a Christian is. So here's a definition that I'm going to use. A Christian is somebody that knows that they have sinned and they need to repent of the sin. They know that they're in need of a Savior. They accept Christ's sacrifice for the payment of the sins, and because of the great, incredible love that Christ has given, forgiven the sins, and forgiving the sins, they follow him for the rest of their lives. So that's what I'm going to use. Now, what about some of these scientists that we talked about? What was their relationship with Christ? We saw that they believed in God. Just like if you see a painting, you know there's a painter. Well, if you see something created, you know there's a creator. Well, let's go back and revisit some of these people. Let's talk about George Washington Carver. He really was an outspoken Christian. He said Jesus must be, said one of the most, Jesus said one must be born again, become as a little child. You must let no laziness, no fear, no stubbornness keep you from your duty. And George Washington Carver spent a lot of time telling people about Jesus and sharing his faith. Now, the other one is Sir Isaac Newton. Now, Newton, this is interesting. Do you know he spent more time and wrote more about biblical prophecy than he did about physics? And if you go to the blueletterbible.com, they have all of Newton's work, mostly on Revelation and Daniel, about his work in prophesying, in prophecy that the Bible did. And Newton was he had some warts, but he said, there is one God, the Father ever living, omnipresent, omniscient, almighty, the maker of heaven and earth, and the one mediator between God and man, the man Jesus Christ. So Newton was a Christian. Jonas Kepler, who had the friend without a nose, he said, I believe only and alone in the service of Jesus Christ. In him is all refuge and solace. Marconi, I'm proud. I like this Marconi. I like this quote because what he did is he took his work and he translated it into his Christian belief. He says the prayer is kind of like radio waves. Let's listen to what he said. I am proud to be a Christian. I believe not only as a Christian, but as a scientist as well. A wireless device can deliver a message through the wilderness. In prayer, the human spirit can send invisible waves to eternity, waves that achieve their goal in front of God. Isn't that a beautiful analogy? And this, of course, is exactly what he did. Now we talk about Michael Faraday. Michael Faraday belonged to a Christian group that had no head pastor. And what they did is they alternated between among those that went to the church who gave the sermon every Sunday. And Michael Faraday gave a number of sermons at his church. And he was an incredible Christian. He turned down a lot of honors, including the presidency of the Royal Society. He says, you know, I don't want to do that. That's just fame. That's not nothing for me. I want to do what God called me to do, which is to be an experimentalist. I don't need to be any president or anything. So he said, though the thought of death brings the thought of judgment, it also brings to the Christian thought of Jesus Christ who died and rose again for the justification of those who believe him. Faraday was a follower of Christ. When he was on his deathbed, he was famous by that time. He had done so much that he was approached by a number of newspaper reporters that gathered around his deathbed and said, can you tell me what your speculations are of what's going to happen when you die? And he said, speculations? I know nothing about speculations. I'm resting on certainties. I know my Redeemer liveth, and because he lives, I shall also live. So Faraday really believed in his faith in Christ. James Clerk Maxwell, and God said, boop, and there was light. He also was a Christian, as you can see through this quote. Think what God is determined to do to all of those who submit themselves to the righteousness and are willing to receive his gift of eternal life in Jesus Christ. Euler, who had page after page after page of mathematics. And again, if you go into engineering, or you go into physics, or you go into mathematics, you study these people. You know exactly what they did and their monumental contributions. But again, there's little talk of who they were. And here's Leonard Euler, the guy that went blind in both eyes. He said, the divinity of Christ's mission, and you can see, by the way, can you see his eye kind of weird there? Right? That's when he was blind in one of his eyes. The divinity of the Christ mission in this world cannot be possibly be called into question. It is an established truth that Christ has risen from the dead. We can absolutely trust in all the promises given in the gospel. Now, Blaise Pascal, I love this guy. He was just a genius. The metric unit of pressure is named after him. So many pascals. In the U.S., we still use millimeters of mercury, but the metric system, they use Pascal. There was a computer language named after him, Pascal, because he invented one of the first computers. The guy had something happen to him which was astonishing, which I think we would call the day that he came to know Christ. But let's look at his quote first. He says, "We know God only through Jesus Christ. Through Jesus Christ we know God. All who have pretended to know God and prove him without Jesus Christ have only had impotent proofs." Now, this was a guy that was a mathematician. He did proofs for a living. And I mentioned this before. There is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every man. We talked about AI and how they were trying to fill that vacuum. There is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every man which only God can fill through his son, Jesus Christ. Now, here's what happened to Pascal. Historians call it the night of fire. He had an experience where he encountered Jesus Christ one evening, and it was just astonishing to him. It was the night where he became a Christian. And when he was dead and they were taking off his clothes, they found out sewn in his lining were these papers. And they took it out, and you know what it was? It was the account of the night that he became a Christian. So we have recorded for history what happened to Blaise Pascal on his night of fire and exactly some of the things that he went through. And it changed totally. Up to then, he was a scientist, and he did all of those great scientific things. After that, he dedicated himself to apologetics. And he wrote a book called The Penzace, which you can still buy on Amazon.com. And he was keeping them on little, I think, kind of little index cards, you know, these points he wanted to make. But he died before he could put them into a book. But somebody got a hold of them, and they have published them as the Pensées, which is French for thoughts. And here is some of the stuff that Pascal wrote. This is available on the web if you want to look at it. It's just fascinating. Again, the historians call this the night of fire when Pascal came to Christ. We know the date that he came to Christ. It was Monday, November 23rd, 1654. He dated his conversion. He said, "Certitude, certitude, feeling, joy, peace, God of Jesus Christ, thy God and my God, forgetfulness of the world and everything except God." He was overwhelmed with his encounter with Christ. "Let me not be separated from him eternally. This is eternal life, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent." And then those of you who have had the experience, like I had when I was a junior in college, know the incredible joy that you have when coming to Christ. And he wrote down joy, 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 joy. So that was an astonishing transformation for Blaise Pascal, who we see not only in engineering and computer science and mathematics, but if you go over to seminaries, you'll also study his work. He did all of this, by the way, before the age of 39 when he passed away. He passed away as a very young man, but he did enormous things. So you can see that a lot of what we celebrate now as Christianity, or we celebrate now in terms of the works of mathematics and physics and et cetera, had their roots in Western Europe, and it was because of people pursuing God in terms of in terms of Romans 1:20. Okay, I'm just going to play this to remind you.
Religion, I mean, it's just fantasy, basically. It's completely empty of any explanatory content. And it's evil as well.
Okay, he kind of has an evil chuckle there at the end. One of the things about the atheist today is sometimes they make these talks and accusations without opposition. You want to listen to some good things. Listen to debates between the Christians and the atheists. And if you have a good apologist, you will find out that they are left in the dust. So here is this same Peter Atkins having a quick, this is just a quick clips of him talking to William Lane Craig, who is maybe one of the greatest living Christian apologists alive today. He has debated every atheist in the world and is just an astonishing guy. So what happens is that Atkins comes on. There I am. Atkins come on and he said, he's going to say, do you really say that there's something that happens which cannot be explained by science? And William Lane Craig comes back and says, yeah, I was going to mention that. Listen to what he says. And I want you to also pay very close attention to the expression on Atkins' face during this little clip. Oops.
Do you deny that science cannot account for everything?
Yes, I do deny that science.
So what can't it account for?
Well, had you brought that up in the debate, I had a number of examples that I was going to give. I think there are a good number of things that cannot be scientifically proven, but that we're all rational to accept. Let me list five. Logical and mathematical truths cannot be proven by science. Science presupposes logic and math, so that to try to prove them by science would be arguing in a circle. Metaphysical truths, like there are other minds other than my own, or that the external world is real, or that the past was not created 5 minutes ago with an appearance of age, are rational beliefs that cannot be scientifically proven. Ethical beliefs about statements of value are not accessible by the scientific method. You can't show by science whether the Nazi scientists in the camps did anything evil as opposed to the scientists in Western democracies. Aesthetic judgments, number four, cannot be accessed by the scientific method because the beautiful, like the good, cannot be scientifically proven. And finally, most remarkably, would be science itself. Science cannot be justified by the scientific method. Science is permeated with unprovable assumptions. For example, in the special theory of relativity, the whole theory hinges on the assumption that the speed of light is constant in a one-way direction between any two points A and B. But that strictly cannot be proven. We simply have to assume that in order to hold to the theory.
But you're missing the whole...
So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Yeah.
So okay. None of these beliefs can be scientifically proven, and yet they are accepted by all of us.
So therefore, any time, wasn't that a great clip? Any time that you hear an atheist talking, let's put them in a room with a seasoned apologist and let them go back and forth. There are some great debates between John Lennox and Richard Dawkins, which are just astonishing, between a Christian and a avowed atheist. In fact, let's hear next from John Lennox. John Lennox is a professor at Oxford. He's an apologist and a really good guy.
The reason you believe in consciousness and energy, even though you cannot understand very much about what they actually are, is because of their explanatory power. They make sense of various things that you observe, and I said it's exactly the same, of course, at a deeper or perhaps a higher level with my faith that Jesus is both God and man. It's the only solution that makes sense. That he is a man is not difficult, of course, but it's that he is both God and man. And I believe that that makes sense of the evidence of his life, the uniqueness of his claim, which he backed up by showing that he possessed the attributes of God. And above all, I suppose the central thing that I find convincing is the fact that he rose from the dead. He's broken the death barrier.
So Richard Dawkins is a professor at Oxford, so is Lennox. So they both do the same thing. Because of time, I'm going to skip by the next one, which is John Sanford, who wrote Genetic Entropy, a great, fascinating book. Dr. Stanford invented something called the gene gun. He was at Cornell University, a professor there. He became independently wealthy because he patented the gene gun and made big bucks. And now he spends most of his time in apologetics. And so you can see here the necessity of apologetics that needs to be taught to the young people going to universities. They need to understand how they can push back on this stuff. And they don't want to do it in some cases because the professor has power over them. But there are still ways where they can stand strong in their faith. That's the reason that I'm involved with Ratio Christi, because we take these young college students and we attempt to infuse them with apologetics that they can defend their faith and quit and not stop going to church. Now, you might think that, you know, everybody, you know, every professor is an atheist. That isn't true. In fact, there's entire organizations of Christians who are professors who get together and talk about their faith. And in a study, this is a little bit old, I think it's about a decade old, the percentage of professors that are Christian are about the same as the percentage of truck drivers who are Christians. So it's something which is kind of interesting. There's many of them, and this includes me when I first became a Christian in academia, that are afraid to be open about it, to be able to talk about it. And that's what I'm going to talk about tomorrow, is living out loud as a Christian in any secular world position. But here are some of them. There's Faculty Commons, which is an arm of Campus Crusade in the upper right. There's the American Scientific Affiliation, which is an organization of professors who are Christian, and then the Christian Scientific Society, and there's a number of others. So we do have a stronghold, and one of the things that we need to do as professors is to make sure that the other side doesn't steamroll over our faith. So here are the takeaways. First of all, science and faith are not mutually exclusive. If you remember P.Z. Myers, he said that science took him away from his faith. Same thing with Dawkins. Science took him away from his faith. Well, these other professors, they're exactly the opposite. Science took them closer to God. It is not a question of true or false. It's just a question of ideology and where your standards lay. So science and faith are not mutually exclusive. The battle is ideological, not scientific. And if you drill down on some of these atheists, you'll find out that they do not reject Christianity because of science, that there is a deeper reason. There is also nothing new under the sun. We've had pushback on Christianity over the ages, and it continues, and it will continue. This is the battle that we're all involved in some way. And the last one is scientific apologetics run deep. I love Christianity because you can be a person with a very low IQ, and you can understand the gospel. You can understand Christ. You can understand salvation and the need for a savior. Or you can be a nerd like me that wants proof. Stephen Hawking once said in his book, now Stephen Hawking was an atheist, but he said something interesting. He said nothing in physics is ever proved. We just accumulate evidence. Nothing in science is ever proved. We just accumulate evidence. Yeah. So if I drop this little bottle cap here, whoop, more evidence for gravity, right? So I'm accumulating evidence. So I think for people like me that would like to see the evidence via apologetics, and when I came to Christ, I had so many questions that I didn't understand, but I also knew I had that God-shaped vacuum inside me, right? But apologetics has helped answer that question. And apologetics allows you to accumulate the knowledge that you need in order to have a strong faith and to believe that indeed there is God and that Jesus Christ was his son.